W. A. G's Tale. Chapter 1. Uncle Bert's Billy. My name is William Ainsworth Gordon, and my initials spell W-A-G. That is why Auntie May and I call this book W-A-G's Tale. If it was about a dog, it would be Tail Wags. So it's true and a joke too. I am 10 years old and my father and mother are in heaven, and I have only Uncle Bert to take care of me. Uncle Bert isn't my real uncle, but he was my father's chum when they were at West Point, and he promised father to take care of me. And he does, only he had to go to the Philippines with his soldiers, so his sister, Auntie Edith, is taking care of me until he comes back. Everybody else calls me William, but he calls me Billy, so I am the one this chapter is named after. Auntie May says I can begin with the very day Auntie Edith brought me down here. That was the day Uncle Bert went away to join his regiment, and everybody was sort of quiet, and even the big people cried a little. I cried a good deal, when nobody was looking, and when Uncle Bert caught me at it in the corner of the room, he didn't say a word, but just picked me up and held me so tight that one of his buttons got stamped on my cheek like a seal. He said he'd give way and cry, too, for it was good for the eyes, only his colonel had expressly ordered him not to, saying he would leave all red-eyed men home, which would be terrible for a soldier. So I begged him not to give way, and he said he wouldn't if I'd stop, because one fellow bawling makes it hard for the other fellow not to. So I stopped and we laughed a little, and then he showed the mark on my cheek to Auntie Edith, and said, "This shows that this young man belongs to me, so be careful of Uncle Bert's Billy and return him in good condition, for there will be a dreadful time if I find him chipped or broken, when I come back." Then the lady I call Auntie May, though she isn't any relation to me either, but is just Auntie Edith's friend, laughed and said she would be careful to treat me nicely. And she has. I like her best next to Uncle Bert. She didn't cry. She laughed a lot, and every time Uncle Bert got sad and tried to talk to her, she laughed more, and she took me on her lap and kept me there all the time Uncle Bert was saying goodbye to her. He looked more like crying then than any other time. He said, "Goodbye, May, won't you change your mind?" And she said, "Oh, no, Bert, I can't." Then he was going to say something else when I said, "Remember the colonel, Uncle Bert, and don't get your eyes too red to go," and then they both laughed. Uncle Bert said, "Look after Miss Heath for me, Billy, while I'm gone," and I said, "Sure I will. I'm going to adopt her as my auntie, too." She put her arms round me and hugged me and Uncle Bert said, "Lucky Billy," and then the door closed, and Auntie Edith began to cry and Auntie May looked queer for a minute and went to the door. I thought she'd run after him, but she stopped and said, "Come along, Sir William, and we'll pack our bags, 'cause we're all going to the country on the 3.10. And I took hold of her hand, and we went upstairs together, and packed my bag and put in my gun, my soldiers, my books and my paint box. Then Auntie Edith stopped crying and tied a veil over her face. If she'd been a soldier, she'd been left home all right. We got in a taxi with a lot of bags and things and went to the Pennsylvania station, which is miles and miles long, I think, but there are lots of kind black men who wear red caps and run up and take your bags and carry them for you just as easy. One of them took my bag and Auntie May's suitcase, but Auntie Edith had another one, a fat one, all alone for her things. We just had time for our train, so we had to hurry right through the waiting room, and I couldn't stop and see all the things there are to see, or watch the people coming down the stairs. People's legs are funny if you watch them coming down, like things made with hinges. Then we got into a nice big train with chairs in it that swung round. They call it a Pullman, which is a good name for a car, only it's the engine that pulls the man in the car, too, really. Then we got all comfortable, with another nice colored man who showed his teeth at us, and put our bags up on a rack, and Auntie May gave me some sweet chocolate and a magazine with pictures in it, and Auntie Edith said, "I wish we didn't have to change at Trenton," and, then, I fell asleep. The next thing I knew Auntie May was saying to me, "Wake up, Billy, dear, it's Trenton now." She put on my jacket and the man took our bags again and we stepped out on a big platform, and then another man took all our bags and we went up one stair, and down another, and waited on a long platform, where trains kept shooting up every minute. I couldn't understand what the man in uniform said, until at last a funny little train, all short, only half as long as our New York one, and with funny, hard straight seats, came, and we climbed in. Auntie Edith and Auntie May and me had to carry our own bags and fix them. The train waited a long time, but at last it moved, and Auntie May put her arm round me and sat me next the window, only it wasn't open, because it was only April and wasn't warm enough yet, and said, "Now we're off to East Penn Well." The train just crawled along, and there was a big canal on the one side. I saw a canal boat with two men and a dog on it, and they were cooking something in a big pot on the top of a stove that stood right out of doors, on top of the boat, with a stovepipe that didn't go into any chimney, but right up into the air, with smoke coming out of it. I showed it to Andy May and she said, "You will see them every day when we get to the towpath," and I felt awful glad at that, because though the boat moved slow, the train moved fast, and I didn't get a good look at the boy who was driving the mules. I couldn't be sure whether he'd made a face at me or not, but I think he did. Then by and by on the other side of the train came a great big river, all fast and running along and some bubbling up places in it where rocks stood up. Andy May said those were rapids and this was the Delaware River, the one Washington crossed. I think more of him than ever, now I've seen the river, for it's good and wide and it must have been a cold job getting over it. I told Andy May I hoped it wasn't at the rapids he tried to cross, and she said, "Oh, no, and I'll show you," and presently the train stopped and the conductor said, "Washington's crossing." There was a big tree, where he could have tied a boat if he'd wanted to. Andy May said maybe he did, and a White House where I guess the soldiers got something to eat and drink. Anyway, I hoped so. Andy May said she'd never asked, so she couldn't say, positively, as it was so long ago, but it wouldn't hurt to think they did. So I imagined it that way. Then our train stopped at a station and we got out. I hadn't been ready for its stopping, and I got so busy getting my things on, and getting my bag in my hand, that I didn't hear the name of it, and I asked Andy May if it was East Penn Iwell, and she said, "Oh, no, this is Scrubsville, New Jersey, and East Penn Iwell is in Pennsylvania." "Will we get into another train, then?" I asked, and Andy May laughed and said, "Oh, no, just wait and see." Then we got off and walked down, carrying our bags, to a big bridge right over the Delaware. There was a man sitting, at the end of the bridge, in a little house with a window in it, and you paid him 2 cents apiece before you could get on the bridge to go to Pennsylvania. He is the toll man and it is a toll bridge, and it seemed to me very funny to have to pay to walk. Andy May said it was funny, too, but Auntie Edith said it was a nuisance. Auntie Edith asked the toll man if we could leave our big suitcase there, until Mr. Tree the grocer came over with the wagon for our trunks, later, and he said, yes. He was a nice smiling man. Then Auntie Edith and Auntie May and I, and Auntie Edith's bag and my little one, which Auntie May carried because she said we had a long walk ahead of us, went over the bridge. The wind almost blew my cap away, but I caught it just in time, and on the bridge we met a big man carrying a paint box and a folding up stool, like Auntie Edith has, and he had an enormous dog, as big as me, and it galumphed at me, and I got behind Auntie Edith, for she is very big both ways, and the man said, "Down, Pete." When the dog downed, he shook hands with Auntie Edith, and she introduced him to Andy May and me, and he said he was glad to see us, and I could come and play with his children up the towpath. I said, "Yes, sir," but Andy May and me kept away from Pete, because we didn't know him then. We know him now and like him. The man said, "Wait till I get back and I'll take you up in the launch." Then he went on to Scrubsville, and Auntie Edith said, "Such a pleasure to meet Mr. Turner. Now William won't get tired walking up. Won't that be nice, William, to go up the canal in the launch, instead of walking?" I said, "Yes, Auntie Edith," to her, but to Auntie May I said, "Will that Pete be in the boat, too?" And Auntie May whispered back, "How gracious. I hope not. But don't let him know we're afraid, old man." So I took her hand tight and we followed Auntie Edith, who is an awful fast walker and always has so many things to do. First we went to the post office, which is a little wooden building, and the postmaster knows everybody and looks at you over his glasses. Then we went up a funny street with brick pavements, awful old. There are houses on that very street built before the Revolution, and a big cannon in the square. We went to Mr. Tree's, and he's a nice, big grocer man, with everything in his shop, and he patted me on the head and gave me a chocolate candy, which Auntie Edith said I might eat, if I ate it slowly. He said he would bring our trunks and bags up right away. Auntie Edith said, "Now I've got to order oil from Trier and coal from Quick and some thread from Miss McFarland's Notion Store," and I said, "Why don't the servants do all that, Auntie Edith?" She laughed and said, "There are no servants for us at East Penn Iwell, William, we do the work ourselves," Auntie May said, "but it will be fun, Billy. All the artists like Auntie Edith live that way down here, and you and I will be the writer people and we'll do lots of funny things together. Only, Edith," she said, "the boy and I are weary. Where can we rest while you finish your shopping?" "Oh, very well," Auntie Edith said, Come and I'll show you the launch and you can get in that and sit and wait for Mr. Turner. We walked up a funny, hilly, crooked street, with partly brick pavements again and partly stone, till we came to an old wooden bridge over a canal, and then Andy May squeezed my hand and said, Billy, this is our canal. We crossed the bridge, and went down a few steps and there was Mr. Turner's launch. We got in and sat and watched the water and made up stories to each other, till Auntie Edith and Mr. Turner came, all full of bundles. Mr. Turner started the launch and we went chug-chugging along. But Pete didn't get in. He swam part of the time and ran and barked on the towpath the other part. The canal boats came down past us, and they began to have lights on them, and the trees were all green and hung down by the canal banks, and I could see where the dogwood was beginning to come out in the woods. There were some ducks swimming in the canal, and a farmhouse high above us on the bank. Then nothing but the towpath, which is the path on one side of the canal where the mules walk when they drag the canal boats. By and by I saw two tiny white houses, with their roofs and chimneys sticking up over the canal bank, and one of them had a funny green door, and honeysuckle all growing over the fence. Mr. Turner never stopped till Auntie Edith called, Oh, we're going past, then he stopped and jumped out and took a rope and pulled the boat close to the bank, where there were some stones placed like steps. I saw the two houses plainly then, one a white stone one and one a white wooden, one with a green door. We all stepped out, with our bags, and said goodbye to Mr. Turner, and his launch went away up the canal past us, and Auntie Edith took a key out of her pocket and went down a step, into the garden of the house with the green door, and opened it, and said to Auntie May and me, Come in, children. This is our house. Chapter 2. Our house. Auntie May and I went inside, and we looked at each other and laughed. It was small, like a doll's house, and the room we stepped into, through the doorway, had a window the same side as the door, which looked out on the towpath, and two windows at the back, and a stovepipe coming right out of the floor and running up through the low ceiling. When I went and looked out at the back windows, I called to Auntie May, Oh, see, it's the Delaware. And it was. There, right at the foot of our back garden, under the willow trees, was the Delaware River, running along, very fast. I said, Come on, let's go down to the river, Auntie May. But Auntie Edith said, First, look at the house. We went through a little door into another long, narrow, low room, with a window on the towpath and a window on the river, and a queer old-fashioned bureau and two iron beds in it, and a clothes horse, in one corner, covered with muslin. When you open one flap,